in a world.
Well, well, well. Alexei, can you believe it? We got our first guest on In a World.
We're changing the world, baby.
We're changing the world right now. Big Percy in the house. What's up, church?
Oh, man, y'all going global and international now.
We got him in the house. Hey, for the people that don't know, we got Damian Roderick, a.k.a. Big Percy, Mr. Order My Vodka. Born and raised in Pomona, California. True legacy. I need mine. I'm dried up. CEO of Roderick Music Marketing, RMM. Percy got over 3 decades in marketing, sales, and promotion for major artists, athletes, and celebrities. He's done work with everybody. Obviously, Snoop, Warren G, Dog Pound, Daz, Corrupt Wiz, Too Short to name a few. My frat brother said to Entertainer, what up, yo? Percy.
Holla.
Holla. Percy done everything. He's expanded into True Legacy Vodka, Golf Beef, Celebrity Golf Tournament, Persevere CBD Line, Rider Gang Lifestyle, Chronic Tales. He's a father, a girl dad, and most recently, we can call him an author. Alexei, let's give it up for Big P in the house. Percy, welcome to In the World, player.
We got a two player on the phone.
You know, look at that, man.
My slogan out of Pomona is all I'm trying to do is pee on the world.
Pee on them.
I appreciate y'all having me on y'all platform, man. It's a blessing. So I want to give y'all flowers as well. And I'm taking the opportunity to spend some time with y'all, man, and let the world know about my journey via through my eyes, my ears, my soul, and my spirit with this book. And my first love of everything is my city, and my city happens to be the city of Pomona. And I talk about my trials and tribulations, my family circle, my inner circle, the street life, my basketball love, how I met Snoop. Because, you know, many people throughout the years and every day through my travels ask me how I came up, how I met Snoop, how I got into business. So I'm just giving them something now, and it's just a sneak peek. When I drop my movie, has already been.
Ah, hell.
Yeah, my movie's been in the can for 10 years. And I'm just fine tuning it. But I said, you know what? I had an opportunity to come across this publishing company, Action Takers. I met them at the George Lopez Golf Tournament I play in every year.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Linda, me and her hit it off. I had some opportunities with some other publishing companies. They was bullshitting, dragging their feet. And Linda stepped up and we put this masterpiece together. Number one right now on Amazon.
Scourge.
In the hip hop musical department. And then we number two in the sports department behind MVP Jokic.
Look at you.
I love that, bro.
Look at you. Do it. Do it one time for him, church. So talk to us about it. So you've got the movie in the can. You got the book. What made you finally kind of jump off the porch and say, I'm gonna finish this book. I'm going to make it happen.
It's just about timing. Like I tell everybody, never block your blessings because you never know where it's going to come from. Mm-hmm. And me bumping into Linda and the Action Taker Publishing Company, it was a blessing. And we seized the moment and jumped on it. It's always something that I wanted to do and had in my repertoire to do, but I just never got with the right people to finish it. You know, I'm a writer. I don't know the intricate parts about putting a book together and how long it takes and everything else. And they gave me the cliff notes and the baby steps, how to really do it and put it together. And I think it came out great. The reviews are going through the roof and I'm just proud of it. And I'm celebrating also my grandmother's life with this book. And I'm mm-hmm. also celebrating my aunt's life with this book. And it's a tribute to them as well.
That's amazing. Church, you're from Pomona.
Born and raised.
Tell us a little bit about what it was like coming up in Pomona. You know, I'm from the D. Alexei grew up in Colorado. And, yeah. You know, I'm
from the D too. So
that's right.
I'm born and raised in Pomona, but my grandfather is born and raised in Detroit.
Motown. So, and I see Barry Sanders up on the right. I see you, church. I messes with that.
Oh, yeah. Let me see if you can get a better view up.
Yeah, there we go.
There he is.
There we go.
Yeah. But you know what I got over here?
Hey, we're gonna talk about that too. I haven't seen Patriot Man in a long time.
Hey, Patriot Man, you see where his mask are? His mask is hanging up retired.
Oh, look at it. Look at it.
We're gonna get into Patriot Man, but we always looked at LA, you know, through TV and the news, kind of like how people looked at Detroit. But tell us a little bit what it was like coming up in Pomona.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a 70s baby. So growing up in the 70s, Pomona was the melting pot. And Pomona being one of the last cities in the L.A. County and then borders the I.E., which is the Inland Empire, it's we got to stand on our own and we have to come a little harder than everybody. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't know and realize that the L.A. County Fair is in the city of Pomona. So if the L.A. County Fair, your city fair is in your city, that says a lot for mm-hmm. your community and what you do for the L.A. County, you know, district. So, mm-hmm. you know, coming up in Pomona, my years was wonderful. It was the great memories. I talk about it in the book. It's the melting pot. As a kid, we was able to move around and we had families in all different parts of the city, not just based off what section you were from or what gang you was affiliated from. Everybody was in the same gang at that time mm-hmm. in my eyes. You know, mm-hmm. it was pure love. It was pure community. You know, I rode my bike from this house to that house to this mm-hmm. house. We were able to walk at night. We shared the same community pools, mm-hmm. went to the YMCA, the boys club to play basketball, the different fun. It was just a great time. And then as things changed, like any other city, uh-huh. The crime element, the drugs mm-hmm. come in, mm-hmm. it changes your city. So I seen all that growing up in the city of Pomona, but that's what made me, and mm-hmm. that's what made me want to step out and get something better for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
In terms of you mentioned gangs, from the capital P, from little P to a capital P. It's yeah. all about
and,
it.
And that's me, you know.
That's you.
Everybody knows me as a little kid with this fro. At that time it was red and orange and all different colors.
Redhead kingpin on them.
Yeah, running around the neighborhood with my big cousins that played basketball and that was prominent in different things in the city. A lot mm-hmm. of people know me as Little Pete, but then mm-hmm. as I grew and made my name in different avenues from sports to business to management to entertainment to a slew of other things, I became Uncle P and Capital P and Big P and everything else. So it's just a whole full transition of me growing. And Pomona, uh-huh. and Pomona is the city that helped me grow.
That helped raise you. I'm going to ask one more question. I'm going to hand it over to Alexei. So when did you, coming up, and we came up around the same time, when did you first recognize that there was gang culture, right? Like, when did you recognize that there was one side or another? Was it all of your life, or was it like when you were 7 or 8 that there were, you know, there were two sides to this thing?
Well, my parents and my father, mainly my father, tried to keep us away from that stuff because mm-hmm. he knew about it. You know, my dad mm-hmm. is an educator and a coach, so he had to go into these inner cities to recruit these mm-hmm. players and all these different things. So he knew about it probably before I did. So anytime something would pop off or he would see the neighborhood going a different direction, he would move us to another part mm-hmm. or a better city that borders the city of Pomona. But me, from my eyes, it was always, and you have it, it comes down to territory. And mm-hmm. if it's not Crip of Blood or Vice Lord's Disciple, mm-hmm. all the different mm-hmm. or Brown, it's a race war. Mm-hmm. And you're always going to have the blacks and the Latinos. So I seen that rivalry and that tension before I seen the Crips and the Blood situation. Because in my city, in my neighborhood, our rivals at that time and our competition or whatever, just on a human race situation, it happened to be the Latino. So I seen it probably gang violence and scene probably at about 10 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And just that was trying to, you know, the younger homies. Well, not the younger homies, the big homies in my eyes we're trying to protect our community, trying to protect our people and protect their families from outsiders coming in and taking over. And that's what I seen from my big homies. And my big homies were money makers and hustlers and everything else, but they were for the community. And then, of course, as time goes and you get into the later 70s, then that's when the different rivals of the Crips and the Bloods come together, because the Crips had started first, and the Crips were more of a community-based revolution situation. Got a problem with the Black Panthers and all that type of stuff.
And a lot of people don't know that.
And a lot of people don't know that. And it was based off more of protecting the community, policing your own community, and doing it in that way. And then for somehow, whatever, you know, the guys started wearing the blue and everything else, and hanging the blue flag. And then like anything in life, is going to be a competition. It's going to be somebody that thinks it's better. You got Pepsi, you got Coke. You got Crips, you got Blood.
Bloods. Absolutely.
The color was blue. The opposite of blue was red. And then now it just spread and spread like wildfires, and it's everywhere. It's Crips and Bloods everywhere. It's Crips and Bloods in Detroit. It's Crips and Bloods and
everywhere.
In Japan.
Yeah. Finland. You name it.
Yeah. Wow.
You name
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's there. It's like the plague. Shit, it's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, you talked about it, and obviously sports and entertainment run together. When did you first know that you had a little bit of game, a little bit of basketball game that could possibly take you somewhere? Did your dad teach you how to play, or were you just playing in the streets?
Well, people don't know soccer was my first love.
No shit.
So soccer was my first love. Like I said, my dad kept us in those communities where you had access to do other things. And soccer was my love. I just grew to soccer because for whatever reason, I played club, I played ASO, I played indoor. I was one of the top goalies that coming out of Chino, California, which is the border of Pomona. And I just strived in it. I loved it. That's where I gained my foot and eye coordination and my agility and all that stuff. I was always in good condition because, you got to run.
I don't know anybody in better condition than soccer players. You running all day.
And that was my first love. So at that time, I didn't see, you know, I'm a visionary. I consider myself a visionary. So at that time, I really didn't see, other than the Olympics or anything else, there was no business or no ancillaries that I was seeing in soccer.
Not back then, for sure.
So, you know, soccer and basketball starts at the same time when you're in high school. Okay. It's the same season. It's the same.
You got to pick one.
Yeah. So when I got to high school, you know, when I got to junior high and everything else, the high schools was already recruiting me to go to the school by my dad's house or schools by my mom's house. When I got to high school, there was no way I was going to play soccer, because now basketball has turned into an all year round situation. You're playing club, you're playing travel ball, you got summer practice with your team and this and that. So it was just an obvious transition that I had to get in basketball. Now, don't get me wrong, even though that time I was playing soccer, I still was playing basketball. I always had a hoop at the court. I mean, a hoop at the house or something in the backyard with basketball. My cousins in the neighborhood of the city of Pomona, my cousin probably was one of the top basketball players to ever come out of our city, George Harden. And I always dreamt about playing basketball the style that they play, because my cousin's high school, Gary High School, they were kind of like five slammer jammer, like Louisville, like Houston and all those guys back in the day. And they were all Black. It was all Black team. Black coaches and all this stuff, man. It was fascinating to me. So I picked that game up. I picked that game up early at a young age, and I never really played at my level or down to my level. I always played with the older guys because they seen something in me. Just like the neighborhood and the gangbangers and the community seen something in me. So they took a liking to, into me and trying to steer me in the right direction. So I would say my hoop dreams probably started the same time as my my soccer dreams.
Mm-hmm.
When I knew that I was special and was able to take it to the next level, I would probably say my eighth grade year when I dunked on one of my teachers. And we had a
field day playing the teachers type hookup.
It was the team versus staff. And I went down the middle, man, and I dunked on my science teacher, man. I was talking shit to him and everything. And my science teacher was my man. He was
And he yoked on him.
I yoked on him, man, on a 10-foot rim outside on the hard top, and all the kids went crazy. The staff, his peers was laughing at him. Me and him was never friends the same after that.
Of course not.
We church was never, I kid you not. I never got any peripheral treatment, man. I didn't get pizza first, and when I was late, I got in trouble, man.
What happened?
It went downhill, man.
When did you hit your growth spurt? Like, how long have you been that tall?
I've probably been this same. I'm 6'6", 6'5". I've probably been this same height, kid you not, at least probably my sophomore, junior year. Mm. Yeah. Mm. See, when I was 12, I wore from 12 to 15, my age was the same size as my shoe.
Mm.
So I was 12, 13, I was 13, 14, 14. So my mom was getting worried. She's like, damn, what are we going to do? We already have to go to the store early and call and get special treatment.
You couldn't find 15s back then, bro.
Not back then, no.
But rest in peace, my grandmother in the city of Pomona, we had a shoe store called Freeman's.
Mm.
And Freeman's was an old school underground store.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of people didn't know about. And my grandmother, every time I would come see her or visit, she wanted to get me some, she would take me to Freeman's, and they used to have a lot of 14s and 15s.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would just clean them out.
That's excellent.
Whoop.
That's excellent.
I love that.
Pomona.
Pomona, man. It's the heart.
Pomona all day. So what I've noticed about you, Percy, and I thought I was a connector. Until I got a chance to spend time around you. But there's a book. There's an author, Malcolm Gladwell, and he popularized a term, and it's called a connector. He wrote this book. It's called The Tipping Point back in 2000. And it literally explains you to a T. It says a connector knows many people. Connectors have a large network of friends and acquaintances across the variety of social, cultural, professional, and economic circles. They make introductions. Connectors are often the ones who introduce people to know each other, and they generate ideas. They're known for their curiosity, generosity, and often quiet masterminds who are drawn to people of all backgrounds and ages. And when I went back over that, I was like, man, that's Percy to a T.
Give me the link to that book, man.
I will. I will. It's you. And it's like connectors are always thinking about how they help others in their network.
I get that from my grandmother.
A lot of people, they just don't have that networking ability or that desire to help others. Tell me about how your grandmother infused that in you, because it's rare.
Very rare.
My grandmother, I 100% get it from her. Of course, I get a little bit of it from my parents. My dad is the same way, being a coach and being an educator. My mom is the baby of all the elders and all her brothers and sisters. So she's caring and emotional and all the different stuff that comes with that. I'm the baby to my mom and my dad. Mm-hmm. So me, like I said, I really absorbed that from my grandmother, because my grandmother's home, her accessibility to her, the things that she did for the family was unmatched. At any time that you needed some money, some food, a place to stay, regardless of what you had going on in your life or what you had going on with any other family members or what or not, she would always open up her house and open up the things that she had for you. Even mm-hmm. if she didn't have it, she would give it. Mm-hmm. And I used to see her do that, you know, single lady, raised three kids on her own, bought her own house. I mean, lived on her own, did for herself up into her older years when my aunt was her caregiver. But to the day that she passed, she wanted to die in her home, and that's what we let her do. She didn't mm-hmm. want to die in the hospital. Mm-hmm. She didn't want to, she wanted to die in her home that she bought.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to give so much of my stuff because I come across so much stuff. I'm giving so much stuff. People want to give it to Snoop or give it to other artists or me wear it and everything else. And I'd wear it a couple times and then I'd bag it up and give it to my cousins. I got about three cousins that's the same height, same build as me. And then when I would get home, it would be brand new boxes of new shit. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was like, well, you're blessed because you give so much and you don't know when you're going to receive something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that from her. And then coming into the industry and everything else, I was blessed. Mm-hmm. You know, I was blessed with so many different opportunities. And I wouldn't consider myself an OG or a double OG or a triple OG if I wasn't able to reciprocate the same things that came my way mm-hmm. to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where I see. I tell everybody, I've seen everything but Christ. So making others and taking other people on these journeys and letting them go to places that they never dreamt about going and taking them on tour. That's why I really get my joy of seeing other people happy. I don't
wow.
know.
If I said, wow. That's
it's
it.
Just, that's it's, big, just big.
A, it's just a blessing that was instilled to me at an early age. And it's just transpired into my everyday life.
Yeah, go ahead, Alexei. But before you go, I'm gonna say this. That's your next book. I've seen everything but Christ. That's yeah. that's popping. Yeah. Go ahead, Alexei.
Dude,
that's
I love
volume,
that.
That's volume two.
If everybody could be a little
I
more
ain't
like
trying to see him no time soon. Either.
No that's time soon. No time
that's
soon.
My man. But I ain't trying to see him. I'm yet. Still out here. I'm his vessel. I'm still yeah, working.
Let's keep the parking brake on that one.
Dude, if everybody could be a little more like Percy, it'd be a little better out there.
Yeah, I mean, my whole mission is I'm trying to do more good than bad.
I think you're that's succeeding, it. My dude.
Yeah, thank.
So let's keep it back at Pomona. I did about 20 years in the IE. I lived in Temecula for a while, so I know a thing or two about that part of the world.
Wine country.
Yeah. I love it. So I grew up a big car guy. You know, I love the car game, the whip game. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that for a little bit? Like, how did Pomona influence? Because I've been peeping your IG and looking at, you know, I love your caddy and some of your whips with big wheels. Talk to me about the car scene a little bit. How was that influenced by you?
Well, a lot of the hustlers and the money makers in my city, you know, they kept the, it's just, it's the lifestyles. It's like, it's like the liquor, the clothes, okay. the fashion, all that stuff goes with the lifestyle. And the cars is a major part of a person's persona and lifestyle. So as a young kid, I would remember, and I'm not going to even say no names because they're prominent and changed their lives. I don't even finish the names. But
they're on the good foot now.
Yeah, people that hear my story, they'll know and read my book. They'll know who I'm talking about. I remember as a kid standing in my auntie's front yard, and I would see the big time hustlers and players and the pimps ride up and down the street, man, and them Cadillacs and mm-hmm. them Rolls Royces and them low riders or the big trucks pulling the boats and pulling the jet skis, man, and just parading around the city, man, like, damn, I got to get that. Mm-hmm. I got to get that. But I've always been infatuated with the car game because, like I said, it's a lifestyle. It's that really... The lowrider scene is a West Coast lifestyle.
Big time.
But the old school cars goes in every genre, every parts of the world. Mm-hmm. I get requests on my cars from Japan and China. Mm-hmm. Every day, people trying to buy my cars.
Mm-hmm.
And an old school car is built different than these newer cars.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. You know, these old school cars, I can... Some 90% of the cars I got, if I hit something or hit somebody,
it's nothing, over.
It's nothing going to happen to my car. There's That's nothing right. going to happen to me.
There was real whips.
It was real machines. It's real metal.
American
it's
iron.
No, it's no computer. It's nothing. It's none of that shit. And I got I got the newer cars and the Bentleys and all that shit. They sit in the garage. You know what I mean? Right. I pull them up to a meeting or something like that, trying to impress somebody like that. But I'm in my old school cars. I rotate them. I got my pink car in the shop right now. She's getting the BBL.
Hey, you said you got to have a stomach for that.
You
right?
have.
Oh, yes.
90% of my budget, monthly budget and extras and revenue goes to my cars.
I love it.
It's not my choice.
No. But it goes a little bit to my cars
because I say it all the time. These cars are more temperamental than a woman, man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't drive them. Yep. You don't start them up. You don't spend no time with them. You don't clean them up.
Preach.
They shut down. They they clunk on you. Uh-huh. They get mad. They want to get a BBL. Like,
hey,
my
and it's going to cost you more money in the end.
And it's going to cost
but
you
it's worth
more
it.
They see you driving this one more than this
they
one.
They get pissed off.
Oh, man. Hey, that's like the bishop said. You see me riding, right? It looked like it's easy to get to this static, but it ain't.
It no. ain't. You no, see ain't. Me riding up and down Madison. And yeah.
Yes.
It's a cold game. And it just, you know, the Rider Gang Lifestyle, my car club came about via through the pandemic. We did the bike riding. You know, trying to stay outside and exercise. Uh-huh. Bought a $2,000 bike. The guys bought bikes. We were riding through the city. Uh-huh. And it was a good time because we was able to social distance and fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
Still did that. But I got bored.
Yeah.
And I wanted my cars needed some attention. My cars needed some love. So everybody I pretty much rock with either has a low rider or old school. And I called up some of the guys. And Cedric the Entertainer picked up and Wiz picked up. Sid probably sitting on about 6 to 10 old schools. Wiz is sitting on probably about 10 old schools. And they were the first two people. They were like, church, let's roll. I need to get out the house. I want to try to find some food. And you're in your car, I'm in my car. Let's roll. We had no destination, no idea where we were going. We actually got caught up in a couple protests with the BLM and all that shit. Nothing was open. And then I stumbled on. I said, you know what? Let's try Mel's Diner.
I was just,
I said, let's try Mel's Diner. It's a staple in the community. It's a staple in Hollywood. It's world famous. They got good food. They can come out and put the food on the side of your motherfucking window and serve you there. So I'm like, okay, that might be the spot. Pulled up. The waitresses and stuff came out, said, oh, man, you are our first customers in months. Of course, they see me, Wiz, and said, they go crazy. We just fellowship and smoke and drink and order some food. And the grandsons of Mel's, the founder, Mel's, the grandsons came out, and me and those guys built the bond, Chase and Colton. We built the bond, they're brothers, and Mel's Diner is now the hub.
It's the hub.
It's the hub for car culture because that's where the cars used to go and park and you get the tray on the side of your window. It's just a great nostalgia. And now it's the headquarters. They have three in Southern California and we go from Sherman Oaks to Hollywood to the one on Sunset. Mm-hmm. That's either where we meet up, get something to eat, let all the cars meet up and then we take off riding. And then we end up at one of those and eat and fellowship and everything else. But I tried to start it to show the community with the BLM and everything that was going on and all the brothers showed up. And then I had to sit back and say, you know what, P, you fuck with everybody. I didn't know the Armenians rode tough. You know, the Latin boys are really the founders of the car culture world and the low riding and the cruising world. Love so you have to let them in. You have to let them in. And then it just grew and got bigger, and then once Snoop got a hold of it, Snoop's probably sitting on 50 old schools. He wanted to get rid of some and revamp and get some new ones, so he was like, this is perfect timing for him to get some new shit, and it just built and built, and then once Harvey and TMZ got a hold of it, Jay Leno. We went on Jay Leno's Garage TV show. It's been featured in a lot of commercials, Super Bowl commercial, a lot of videos and everything else. And it's actually turned into a business.
Yeah. Nicely. I mean, and that just speaks to your aura, bro.
Exactly.
It speaks to it, you know, because that's where, in a lot of ways, you would think like, oh, well, you know, maybe males won't want this type of group up here, or maybe that's not connected to their brand. And you actually helped them.
Right.
If I called the grandsons right now, they said we actually saved them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because we brought the attention. We spend money every time we come.
Money.
Big money. We've brought the crowds. They got free promotion for TMZ. And I've been featured on Fox Channel with Christine Devine and Spectrum TV. There's been big reports done on this. And I use Mel's Diner as my my epicenter.
Yeah.
And they actually said that we saved them. So I've done pop-ups there. I've done music videos at Mel's. At one time, we would do the old school car ride up and do the drive-in movie. We would rent the big inflated screen.
Yeah.
And do all that. And probably now, at least once a month, now Mel's is doing all type of events.
That's awesome.
Without me, they're doing all type of stuff. We've done merch. I've done merch with them and sales out every time. And it's just a beautiful relationship. And like you said, who would have known? I've been going to Mel's for 30-something years as a kid. My mom goes. They know my mom. My daughter pulls up there. They put it on my tab and my credit. It's just it's a blessing, man.
That's awesome.
I love it. I love it.
So,
all because of the car game. I love it.
All because of the car game.
You mentioned it. Let's get into it, right? So obviously you've been connected with Snoop and the Dog Pound and Doggy Style. For the folks that don't know, kind of walk us through how you and Snoop made that connection and what that journey has been like.
Well, my brother Cocaine, he comes from the city of Pomona. He's a world famous rapper, does hooks. He already had a relationship, and everything that he was cooking up with the Dog Pound and Snoop were hits. And at that time, I was managing him. And we were up at Warren G's house and Warren G's studio working on some music with Mr. Grimm and a couple other artists. And then we got the call to pull up to the doghouse because Snoop needed Coca on some music. And we get to the doghouse and everybody's there. The East Siders, the Doggies, Angels, the Twins. It was just the whole Dog Pound, Doggy Style family. They were cooking up. Everybody was cooking from the house studio to the garage studio. I had met Snoop out as just a fan and bumping into him at different clubs or venues or whatever, but I never got to be in the presence of him in a different setting than outside of music or him in his own space.
Right.
And that day, he was like, man, I wasn't even Big Percy then.
I know. You're going to tell us about that, right? Yeah. What were you when you met Snoop? What was your name?
I'm going to tell you a little, but we got to
make it. All right. We'll leave it.
I was D. I was Big D.
Uh-huh.
I was all those things, man. I had another name from my other crew, the Hard Hat crew I had. They called me Lil Horn Dog. You know, I had a few
monikers following you. I like it.
And it was nowhere in that mix with Big Purse. But I had at that time when I first met Snoop and I was managing Coca and all that stuff, I had a partner and he was from the other side of Pomona and his name was C-Note. He was a moneymaker. He had been in the feds and been down, but he was a hustler and he knew how to get paper. And every time people would see us, man, they're like, man, look at these dudes. Cause he's a little short dude, swole, cock diesel player. And then you got me with my persona and my stature. And then when Snoop seen us, he was like, man, you know, the first time we pulled up, my buddy was in a Mercedes. I was in a Mercedes truck. My buddy was in a blue Mink. I had a black Mink. We pull up with some weed. At that time, I think Belvedere Vodka just came. We pulled up with some Belvedere Vodka and shit.
What an error.
Yeah, we was popping. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Big popping.
But we wasn't asking for nothing. We was bringing.
Mm-hmm.
And Doug was like, man, you know, this one, the two-way pagers, and you're beaming people and shit.
The gray ones.
Yeah. And Doug say, man, y'all two men remind me of Big Percy and Lil Seymour from mm-hmm. the movie Uptown Saturday
Night. Uptown Saturday Night.
And it just stuck, man. Everybody heard it. They was like, man, Big Percy, man, beam me your info.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah, Big mm-hmm. Percy, Big Percy, Big mm-hmm. Percy. And Snoop just, he just stayed calling me Big Percy. And he was like, man, y'all just remind me of Big Percy and Lil Seymour. Y'all always together. Y'all always clean. You're always hustling. You're always trying to make some shit happen. And then that's just how the name stuck. Mm. And that first day of going up to the doghouse, I've been with Dog ever since that day. It's going on 30 years.
That's amazing.
But he told me, he pulled me to the side after, you know, probably spending about 2 weeks with him and driving him around. And, you know, within the first week, I brought him a bag, probably about $50,000. From my homeboy that wanted a verse from him mm-hmm. and wanted to do some stuff. So I was bringing shit to the table.
Connecting.
That nobody else was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I was mm-hmm. doing things that nobody else was. Of course, I was bringing the ladies around, and I was bringing the atmosphere, like I like to call them, the atmosphere. and we was having a good time because I was able, you got to remember, the doghouse borders the city of Pomona. So the doghouse was in the city of Claremont, which mm-hmm. we consider the suburbs.
Okay.
And you have to go to get to Claremont, you have to come through Pomona.
Mm-hmm.
So I was connected with so many things that I had resources to bring to the studio, to bring mm-hmm. to the doghouse, to bring to the team. I had cooks. I had restaurants that would bring late night, mm-hmm. 2 a.m, I would call. They fry up some fish, fry up some shrimp and french fry, bring it to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was doing that. I had the champagne club. I had the girls. I had the weed club. I was mm-hmm. bringing shit to the table
mm-hmm.
naturally.
Naturally.
And mm-hmm. then once I started bringing that money to the table, it changed the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dog pulled me to the side and was like, Pete, I got so many people that I take care of. I need somebody like you. You're a breath of fresh air. You never ask me for anything. You just bring. Mm-hmm. And that's why we hit it off like Batman and Robin. His son actually yesterday told us we like Shaq and Pink.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, it's good. Hey, making magic.
Making magic.
All day.
Making
all
magic. All day.
Yeah. So anybody still calling you Damien?
Yeah, my close inner circle. Of course, uh-huh. my family does.
Uh-huh.
A lot of my homies that I went to junior high and high school, they be like, who the fuck is Big Percy, man? We mm-hmm. know you
right,
deep.
Right, right.
Yeah. And of course, they still,
yeah.
They don't want to disrespect me. They call me Big Percy, but a lot of people. And then when my mom or my oldest daughter get mad at me, they're like, Percy.
Yeah. Hey, Percy, so you talked about that. You talked about rolling up with a fur on and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about the pimp era, because there was an era where it was all pimps up, hoes down, minks, the big hats. Talk to me a little bit about that era.
We all got caught up in it. And one of my first, within the first week of me being up at the doghouse, who do I get to sit down with? Who do I get to fellowship with?
No, don't.
With Bishop Don Juan.
Oh, man.
And he's up there, you know,
the chairman of the board.
Chairman of the board of famous players everywhere. And he's there. And as a kid, you didn't watch Pimp and Ho. Pimps up, hoes down. You didn't heard the stories of him being player of the year, Mac of the year for 15, 20 years in a row. These are things that you dreamt of being mm-hmm. a part of. Plus, you mm-hmm. see it in your neighborhood, you know? Mm-hmm. You see it in your neighborhood. You've seen all the flashiness and everything. And it just goes with the lifestyle, man. And I was able to bring a play to Bishop at that time I was running with the crew. They were called the Penthouse Player. Mm-hmm. Penthouse Players was DJ Quick, Player Ham, mm-hmm.
Free,
Rest in Peace, Jam. And I was mm-hmm. with those guys because they had a house out in Rialto, Fontana area, which was near where my mom had lived. Mm-hmm. And I had brought a play to Player Ham and linked him up with Bishop and brought some money that way. And me and Bishop hit it off right away. And of course, Dog was infatuated with it. I was infatuated with it. Everybody thought they was a ladies' man. Mm-hmm. But this is before me having being married and having kids at the time. I was a free spirit. I was a connoisseur, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And we got invited to our first players' ball out in Chicago, man.
Oh my God!
And it's I'm talking about it's suited and booted, man. It's rooted and tooted, man. You know what I mean? It's minks down
it's
to the floor.
It's really a lifestyle, man. It's really a
lifestyle. But you also have to remember, I come from Detroit era too. Snoop comes from the Detroit era. You know,
East
his dad
working in McDonald's. Yeah,
and you seeing the Now Later Gators, man, and the, mm-hmm. you know, bums in Detroit had mink coats. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's just infatuated, man, how you can make a girl give you everything.
Yeah.
And it's just with the lifestyle, man. We went to that first players ball, man, and we was hooked. We threw a couple players balls of our own after. We was really entrenched into that game for a long, long time. Right.
And it's still in your vernacular.
It's still in our vernacular, still in our game. We still have a close relationship with Bishop. He's going through some health issues right now, but he's
peace to Bishop. Yeah, sending him good energy.
He's bouncing back. He is actually considered to the hip hop game and the hip hop era as a spiritual advisor.
Mm.
I see that.
Yeah. And he is the founder and the creator of the word church.
Church.
People don't understand what the word church means because everybody has some kind of belief in a higher mm-hmm. power, mm-hmm. or at least you should.
Yeah.
I don't care if you pray to a head of lettuce. I don't care what you believe in, long as you believe in something greater than you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you don't have to go to a quote unquote church every day.
Mm-hmm.
Long as you are fellowshipping, long as you are having good energy and doing more good than bad, that's church. When I see my brothers and I see my family members, hey, like, what's up, church? Oh, church, man, that's a beautiful. Uh-huh. It's just a way to show gratitude to being here.
Yeah, and church and church be on the move. And church on the move.
You have to be church on the move. That means you making some things.
You making some things pop.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Preach tabernacle.
you talked about it. We came up when you were coming up. Were you listening to West Coast or were you listening to East Coast? Like, you know, around that 12, 13, the 15 year old.
I was listening to everything. I was listening to Depeche Mode. I was listening. I was listening to Led Zeppelin.
Yes.
What's them up? The Wild Boys with the rock and roll hair. Come on, bring the noise. I was listening to all
them.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Quiet
Riot like a motherfucker. Uh-huh. Boy George. I was listening mm-hmm. to all that shit. Of course, you was listening to Run DMC and Beastie Boys, mm-hmm. and Bad Boys and all that shit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was that era. Yeah. So I had a wide variety of music. Of course, you with your parents and your partying at the house parties, you listen to the oldies and the Marvin Gaye's and the Temptations and the Whispers. I never had a boundary on music, just mm-hmm. like I have a boundary of who I fuck with and who I do business with.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. So in terms of, you know, you talked about writer gang lifestyle. I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about golf beef.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. I had the pleasure to go
to golf.
You've been to it? I've had the pleasure to go to golf beef with my wife. And that was a surreal experience. I had never seen, I call it a casino mix. There were so many different people, all ages, all races, all different types of people doing different things, but coming together, and it was all love.
It was
from
all
beginning to end.
Yeah.
Talk to me about Golf Beef and what Golf Beef means to you and the community that you serve.
It's just another blessing, man. Golf has been in my life and my family from the start. My grandfather incorporated it to his kids and played with his wife. My dad and his brothers, they brought it into their life. And then my dad trickled it down to me. I've trickled it down to my kids. So golf has always been a part of my family and my lifestyle. And as I got older, it was a place for me to have some peace.
Mm.
It was a place for me, of course, to be on the green and smoke some and fellowship again and close some business deals and just be away from everything from 4 to 6 hours. You know, you ain't going to pick your phone up.
Mm-hmm.
You have a good time. You're going to clear talk some trash. And, you know, my basketball days are over. So this is my last real competitive thing that I can do other than maybe some bowling or some shuffleboard or some old bullshit. So golf is my go-to.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I was finding out the comedians and the entertainers, they played golf, and these retired athletes and these athletes played golf. It just started being a competition and calling people out and challenging people and like you said, gambling and fellowshipping and having a good time. And then it just came into, let me put a tournament together.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a tournament together, and every year I honor somebody. I go to different courses, community. I always move it around, and the shit has grown. We've been spoofed on Comedy Central. They talk about it on ESPN, and it's just, you would never think something that you enjoy can turn into a business.
Mm.
But that's some of the biggest businesses are made because it's a passion. It's their baby. It's, you weren't looking at it as just money, 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 money. Mm-hmm. You in it for that.
Mm.
And the shit just grown, and it just been a good time. And then all these brands and all these companies that I deal with, I give them an opportunity to have their product in front of hundreds and hundreds of people and bump elbows with celebrities and give their stuff out and sell it and everything else. And it's probably one of the biggest celebrity golf tournaments there is. You know, Khaled and them do there now. But all that stuff has been based off my golf tournament.
Oh, totally.
All these celebrity golf tournaments in the last few years that you see popping up, 100% comes from Golf Beef.
Yeah. Food, drinks, medication, clothing,
CBD.
I mean, CBD oil.
Yeah.
You name it. And I mean, it's probably, you know, church is on the show, but that's probably one of the better events that I done went to where when I walked in, I probably knew 3 or 4 people and I walked out knowing 50.
See what I'm saying?
And you know what I'm saying?
And you're still in communication with them now.
Still in communication. And it's people that you wouldn't think that you would get business with.
Right. And
you got my family there. You got kids. You got news reporters. You got radio personalities. You got
everybody.
Athletes. Mm-hmm. You got big-time celebrity. You got old. You got young. You got, it's just.
You got people traveling in. I mean, that's when I saw it. These people, you know, we land at this nice resort and all these people and they're looking at each other and they're like, are you here for Percy's deal? And I'm like, yeah, I am. What you doing? And they're like, I came in just to help.
Right.
So there are people coming in, traveling.
Yeah.
Just to help.
Yeah.
You know, and just to give out bags and just to do all types of stuff. And let me tell you, I ain't never had a gift bag like that.
Well, it's a networking opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
If, like I said, if I wouldn't be the person that I am if I didn't open up my resources to people that I love and that support me.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I want to hold all that to myself when I can open it up to people that have good things masses need to see about?
I love it.
We were talking about Golf Beef. We were talking about all the connections. So I did a little bit of research. Obviously you've been playing with Matt Barnes for a little bit. Matt Barnes has nothing but good things to say about you. But from what I hear, Matt says you've been getting a pink ball when you're playing with him a lot lately. Is that true?
Matt has got a coach. Matt has a little more resources than I do. And he's been taken advantage of because he used to be Mr. Pink Ball.
Matt used to be Mr. Pink Ball.
It's guaranteed you can walk away with your gas and lunch money. It's guaranteed that you can play your worst round and still beat him.
So he went out and got some professional help to come back at Big P.
He went out and got some professional help, some resources, and his game has improved. Our last four matches, I want to recall, were probably, he says he's 3-1. I say we're 2-2. But the last two tournaments that we played in together, we've won. See, I'm more of a, when it comes to the tournaments, I'm a GM. I know how to put the team together.
I've seen that. I've seen you win a lot. And I'd be like, they win it a lot.
I do what I hit a couple nice drives. I make all the putts that's needed. I do a few good chips. Bring Max for the star power and the nostalgia and the hype. I might bring one or two other celebrities, but I bring my long ball hitters, which is KD is a pro. He's on the APGA tour. Me and Cedric and Matt, we sponsor him. So I always bring KD. KD is he's a sleeper. I bring Louie. Louie is an ex-baseball player and everything else. Louie,
so he got that motion.
Yeah, he can hit the ball 300 plus every time. And then I bring my old banker, which is Al Bear. He can get lucky on a good day and strike the ball and do a good few good things. So that's my core team. I know how to put it together.
So you a player coach?
I'm a player coach. I'm the GM.
So if we were to say, all right, where is your strong suit? Is it the long game? Is it 150 in, or is it chipping and putting? Where's your master class at?
As you know, golf, man, it changes every day. It changes every week. I mean, I'm my go-to club right now, my favorite club right now, I would say is my 9-iron, because I use it for everything. I don't use my pitching wedge.
I don't nine iron. If you a buck, how far can you hit the nine? When will you pull it out?
It just varies. I can hit it from 10 yards, a little tip. If I'm locked in and needed to get it to 130, I can get a nice 130 on the green. And I don't use my pitch. I barely use my sand wedge. And my 9-iron is my trusty go-to.
Excellent.
It'll get me out of trouble when I need it. I'm a great putter, but my 9-iron is my go-to. I'm consistent hitting it 240. Might get lucky and hit something at 300 every blue with the driver. I'm usually straight down in the middle. I'm not worried about my drive. The thing that I'm having trouble, and I was locked in at one point, is that I'm in between clubs that 160 to 180 range. So if you want a par five or a long par four, back a drive, a nice drive, that next shot sometimes bucks. And then I got to throw a dart with the 9-iron to get on the green to try to save par.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lexi.
Can we talk about that clothing stuff, man? Because I love your shoe game. Is that also kind of a bringing it back to the shoes that you were wearing when you was a kid, like Chucks and stuff like that? Talk about the shoe game a little bit.
The shoe game is a passion of mine. The clothing is a passion of mine. What we got to do? Give me one sec. She got to turn this blow dryer on.
Absolutely. All
right. Yeah.
You got to blow me out.
This is going to be the best episode ever.
Who we got here doing your hair, man? Who's here?
She can introduce herself, and she's world famed.
Hello, my name is Lisa.
What's up, Lisa? So let me ask, are you going to put Murray's in there, or are you going to throw some Blue Magic up in there?
Oh, no Murray's or no Blue Magic. That's old school as hell.
Percy be asking for that Murray's. Jam.
Awesome.
Yeah. So go ahead, Alexa. What were you saying?
I think she got to run the blow dry real quick.
Back to the shoes and the clothes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that goes with the lifestyle. And, you know, I was able to acquire my clothing store that I had for 6 years, which was called The Place. Mm-hmm. I had a store out in Vegas, and it was just another opportunity for me to open up something and give an opportunity for clothing companies and brands to be in a store that I never were in a store. And it just worked out, and it worked out good for my family. It worked out good for everything. Then COVID hit. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of the things that I was starting, COVID slowed us down. And then, you know, getting back after COVID really slowed down because people were scared and people were shopping online. People weren't coming to the brick and mortars and all that stuff. So I just recently shut the store down last year. I'm doing a lot of stuff now with that merch and everything else online. I have an online store that I'm building. But, yeah, the shoes and the clothing game, it just, you know, I always build my outfit from the shoes up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. One set.
Yeah, go ahead.
Take a pile.
Yeah, we can barely.
We can't hear it.
You can't hear?
Uh-uh. No, you're good.
Okay.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. So speaking of that, Church, talk to me a little bit about the influence of social media and how that has kind of changed the game, because I look at you like a social media influencer. When did you first start getting on the social media tip, and when did you, you know, recognize how much power it had?
I had no choice. I had to keep up with the times. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an easy way for you to market and platform for you to get to thousands and thousands of people that you didn't have access to. I had to keep up with the times. I don't even own a computer. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? But
mm-hmm.
if I can't do it on my phone, I'm fucked. And social media, you could do everything via your phone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You can easily post something, push send, and it goes out to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now you can monetize and make money off of it and everything else. So, shit, I've been a part when, you know, I would say, you know, the MySpace era, just based on the music and all that stuff. And what was the other one?
MySpace, Facebook.
Still on Facebook.
Uh-huh.
To a certain extent. There was another one with the music. What was that one? Napster.
Napster. Yeah.
All that stuff, man.
Uh-huh.
I love Napster.
You don't want to do it. You have to keep up with that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what I noticed about you too. You could be eating a cupcake,
yeah.
Or you could be eating, or you could get a new pair of socks, and somebody be like, "Oh, where them socks at?" And you are always pushing the person, like, "Hey, you want these socks? At this person, at that person." And sometimes, again, like I say, that's rare. But what I see you doing is you know, if you get something and you like it, you're always letting people know where they can get it.
Yeah, and I'm not like everybody else, man. Everybody wants to edit their picture, filter. If, like you said, if I like it and I'm in the now and I'm in the presence and the mm-hmm. shit looks good and mm-hmm. the shit looks good on me, I'm going up. I'm not waiting. If you take a picture, even she'll tell you, my hair lady.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as she take a picture of the done, what she done, and she take it on her phone, send mm-hmm. me a motherfucking picture, man.
Yeah.
I like to go up. I don't want to wait.
I don't want to wait. It's gone.
I like to go. So I'm done with it. It's fresh in my mind. My thoughts is fresh in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Send me my picture. Don't take no pictures up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's excellent. Talk to me about how the weed game has changed. So we've come up in an era where it was a closed door, behind the scenes deal. And then now you've got, you've got partnerships with weed and all types of things. Like, to me, it's still mind blowing that you can go in the store and buy weed. How is, you know, talk to me about how you've worked your way through that transition and what that game is like for you now.
It's mind blowing to me, too. I still can't believe it. You know, from hustling and selling it on the corner to not even being able to bring it to Vegas. And if at that time it was a felony to have paraphernalia, a seed or a stem. And now it's weed stores on the strip. I can call the weed store and tell them I'm coming. I need some weed for XYZ. I'm going to pull up and they're going to have the package ready. It's just, it's the sign of the times, man. And corporate America seen what it was and they've jumped in and they wanted a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And the weed game is it goes once again with the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. They knew what it was. They hated on it because it was urban based. It was urban based. It was mainly in the black communities. So they were giving us all type of jail time and all that type of bullshit just for some fucking weed. And now look, they overturning a lot of these old convictions and everything else based off the weed. How are you going to get locked somebody up based off something that grows in the fucking ground?
Anything.
And now look at it.
Look at it.
Lawyers, judges, police,
mm-hmm.
the president have all and still smoke weed.
Everybody.
Everybody. And that goes to a lot to do with Snoop. Snoop had made it popular. Snoop made it fun.
Snoop made the Olympics, bro.
You wouldn't even watch the
Olympics. Come on.
Watch the Olympic for basketball and track back in the day. Now, Snoop went to the Olympics. We watching equestrian. Of course, you watching volleyball so you can see a couple of those booties and shit. But you watching canoeing and everything else
because mm-hmm.
Snoop was there.
Absolutely.
100%. Yeah, that's great.
Like I said, with the weed, Snoop's made it fun. You know, Bishop Don Juan, Afro Man, Be Real.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when Burner first started with Cookies, nobody believed in him. And now look what he's done with Cookie. Cheech and Chong, my Uncle Willie Nelson.
These are Willie.
These are people that took the weed game and made it sexy, made it fun, made it accessible. And they not those names I just said, they not trying to hurt nobody.
No,
nobody.
Nobody. Yeah.
And you're going to laugh and you're going to have a good time when you're with them.
Yeah, they all good people, man. Good time. And that weed is it's an icebreaker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So on top of that, right? So you made your launch into the liquor business. You're going to relaunch it. Tell us what we can look forward to in 2025 in terms of alcohol and True Legacy.
Well, 2025 is going to be the rebirth, the relaunch of True Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I'm in the midst of acquiring my partners, the other 50%, so I can have full ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Still going to keep them on as my lab partners.
Mm-hmm.
Want to go anywhere else and have somebody steal my formula.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to bottle it and package it like I like. And 2025, we're just going to take it to the next level, but just because of what's happening in the world with some of these other entertainers and getting caught up in some bullshit. Plus, my product speaks alone.
It's good vodka.
It's great vodka, man. I haven't got one, even from my haters, even from some of the people that don't want to see me win and everything else, they can't deny it. Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to say it. My partners used to get mad. I'm not a vodka drinker. I'm a tequila drinker. Mm-hmm. But I do now drink my vodka and have to do these tastings and go to these events. I drink a bottle, man, and I wake up fresh.
That's my test. Yeah. And I tested it and I was like, I poured a couple of those.
Yeah.
I'm up. I'm ready to go. So it is legit.
Yeah. So 2025, look for the relaunch.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take it to the next level. My team is ready. It's going to happen. And we just gonna keep it true, man, and always build this legacy.
Yeah. I love it, bro.
Go ahead, Lexar. You got some?
I got some stuff. So Can we play? Let's
do the music.
Let's do some music. Yeah.
Wait. So, well, real quick, before we do the music, let's go to this. We can cut that. But all right, real quick, it's in your book, and we know about it, and we are everybody's gonna go get your book. But what advice, real quick, can you give for the young hustlers that are trying to come up, that are trying to follow your path, and you know, have multiple streams of income? They're in the industry. What words of advice can you give for this new hustler out here?
I mean, like I said earlier, never block your blessing. Always be willing to learn. Always, just keep your eye on the prize. Be motivated by others. I said till I'm blue in the face, you have to believe in something greater than you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's pretty good words. Yeah, good words.
Something greater than you. Yeah. And a perfect example in my book and the things that I'm doing, if I can do it, you can do it, man. I never thought I would make it this far, and let alone be able to put a book out, man, and touch so many people. Mm-hmm. And next, putting out my movie. So use me as motivation. Use Snoop as motivation. Use the forefathers in this entertainment business that are still prominent and still relevant. The E-40s and the Two Shorts and the Sugar Freeze and the Ice Cube. They're not touring off their new music. Mm-hmm. They're touring off their old catalog.
Yep.
And making paper.
And that says a lot. That says a lot for them. It says a lot for the era that we're in now. The younger generation, it happened to them too fast. And that's via social media and everything else. A lot of these people didn't have to work for it. And when you don't have to work for something, it's not, you don't have the same drive and the same passion. Mm. And the quality is not the same.
No.
So all these artists that I just mentioned that are still living off their old catalog, mm-hmm. touring the world. Look at Busta Rhymes. He just did a Walmart commercial. Mm. Hip hop is forever if you treat it right, mm-hmm. and value it right. Who mm-hmm. would have thought hip hop would have took us this far 50 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And look at it now. Everything that I do and everything that I have has came off of hip hop.
Yeah.
Well,
let's stay on that real quick. I think what's old will always be new if it's done right. What are your thoughts on covering and sampling? It's like I'm hearing songs now that are covers of covers or samples of samples. What do you think about that? Is that an homage? Is that a disrespect? What is it?
I love it. I love it because the Isley Brothers and all those guys are still making money.
Yes.
Now they're getting a new fan base. And their music is timeless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that type of music, you can put a time stamp on what you were doing in your life when you first heard that song. Mm-hmm. And that song comes back on in a different version, a country version or a pop version.
Mm-hmm.
Still gonna take you back to the good times when you heard it.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it. I love it.
That's awesome.
I hope somebody some of my goddamn music.
We'll make sure that happens. Let's jump into the this or that for Percy.
Let's do it. All right, I'm gonna play a couple songs. Again, if you know the name or the artist, that's cool. But let's focus on, you know, where does this song bring you? What does a memory pop up, or where were you when you remember this playing?
Okay. Yeah, I was probably pop locking, break dancing. At the skating ring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now this, we went through this already, Church. Any idea who this is?
Dun, 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 dun. It's something, man. I'm not good with names.
Yeah.
Me neither. Me neither.
Give it to him, Alexei.
It's New Shoes. I can't wait.
I would have never knew New Shoes.
Yeah. We never knew the name New Shoes. We knew I Can't Wait or remember one of the girls in the group or something like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah, New Shoes. I never, but I know where I was with that music.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
Exactly.
I probably was wearing some fluorescent or some big hair like I got now.
Yeah, something that you could do a backspin real easy with.
All right.
Say it again.
I said something that you could do a backspin and break dance real easy with. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, carrying my cardboard around.
Go ahead, Alexei.
Here we go.
Yeah. So I remember this at probably my uncle's house. They were smoking some of that dirt weed.
Some shake,
and you can whip it, man. They had the roach clips and drinking some Colt 45.
Nothing like some good old malt liquor.
Some Slith's malt liquor, you know? And you can whip it.
Hey, who was this, Alexei? What's the artist?
This is Daz Band.
The Daz Band.
I remember Daz Band one.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
This take you back to high school. You remember this one, Church?
I got to hear a little more. We done?
You was wearing some trench coat mafia shit when this was out. Them your peoples.
That's Depeche Mode.
That's Depeche Mode.
Yeah, that's Depeche Mode.
That's circa like 1990, 89, man.
Yeah, that was my sophomore junior.
All right, let's give them a few more.
That was Depeche Mode.
Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
Look, I got my Depeche Mode hair.
Yeah, you go.
Yes, you do.
Looking emo and shit.
Hell, nuh-uh.
You better
edit this shit up good, man.
Hey, you know you remember this one, right?
Yeah.
This is Evelyn, the Champagne King.
Oh, Evelyn Champagne King.
Oh, man, that's so old school.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Evelyn Champagne King. I just seen her or heard something about her recently.
Been covered and sampled about 1,000 times.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, next.
Let's give you one more.
Yeah, that's Evelyn.
We're shifting gears back a little bit. Back to the 80s.
You got me. Oh,
that's Boy George.
It's close. This is Erasure.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know who the hell that was.
I was going to say Duran.
Yeah.
Church same pulling thing. Them out.
Same thing. Right. A little respect, baby.
Last one.
I like them too.
Yes.
There you go.
I want your love.
I want you.
Who is this, Alexei?
This is Chic.
Chic.
Yeah. Yo, love.
Yeah, awesome. Remember.
I still play that shit in one of my cars.
Hell yeah.
So are you bumping old school or new school in Rider Gang when you Rider Ganging?
All old school.
All old school. Now,
I got 8-tracks.
I was just about to ask you.
I got 8-tracks that still work.
That's what's
happening. I got 8-tracks in the Rolls Royce.
Mm-hmm.
My 1978 Silver Shadow 2. Uh-huh. I got an 8-track in the Pink Cadillac, my 76 Eldorado.
When is Pink Cadillac due to be out with the BBL?
I'm going to check on that little motherfucker pussy. I'm going to check on Pussy Pink next week, man.
Hells yeah.
So I'm getting ready to crack the whip. It's in the interior. All the engine got redone, so now we're just doing the guts and the new top.
I do not have the guts to see what that bill is like. I don't have the stomach for it.
Yeah, this was my birthday present to me, and my birthday was in July, and it's still going.
It's still going. Well, listen, man, I want to thank you on behalf of all the listeners. And Alexei, for one, being our first guest.
Yes, sir.
And being an amazing host, an amazing person, an amazing connector. I'm going to send that to you. Everybody out there, go to www.bigpercybook.com. Get that book. Following on Instagram, RMM Percy. We appreciate you, my brother, and we wish you nothing but the best.
Appreciate you, Tom.
As soon as y'all get this together, man, send it to me. Send me all the deliverables so me and my team can push it, man. I appreciate y'all.
Awesome. One love.
Thank you, my guy.
All right.